These are primal things, aren't they? Like music and dancing and eating. We actually need them for survival. And if you're going to get primitive, then it's like, you know, yeah, we're moving our bodies, we're communicating through sounds, we're scavenging for food.
Something a bit different on Dirty Linen today. We're chatting with Melbourne musician Jess Ribeiro, who has a new album coming out in April. It's called Summer of Love. Oh, I feel like a DJ as I'm talking. This is exciting. You might be asking, why have a musician on a food podcast? Well, for one thing, I think all creative industries overlap and intertwine, and there are synergies and lessons that we can share. But also, Jess has had various focuses on food throughout her life and career. Jess, welcome.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I am super excited to have you on the show. And the first thing I want to talk about is Everything Is Now, a single from the new release, and particularly the amazing video that goes with it. It's set in a classic retro Chinese restaurant. It starts with you sitting at a table folding napkins. And yeah, things get just even more gorgeous from there. Tell us about this video.
Okay, so the video was shot. It's a one-shot video that we created at the Chinese restaurant in Castlemaine in Victoria. It's called New China, and it's a really old-school country town Chinese restaurant, which is really nostalgic for me because I grew up in these types of Chinese restaurants in the small town that I lived in, because my dad, he's from Hong Kong, and so he spoke Cantonese with these were the only places that we could go to as children where my dad could speak Cantonese and hang out with other Asian people who were mostly working in the kitchen.
Wow, that is amazing. So, I mean, what are the feelings, resonances for you when you go into a Chinese restaurant such as this?
I love the decor of restaurants like this. In the video, I think that there's footage of the wallpaper. If you ever get the chance to go into this Chinese restaurant in Castlemaine, you can go and touch the wallpaper, and it has these, you know, these golden velvet-like inscriptions. And so it's all just really, I want to say the word sensuous, but I don't think that that's the right word to use, but I just used it, so we'll go with it. It's all, I love that decor. It's just really, for me, that's very familial. It's very homely, and also aspects of it are quite similar to some of the furniture that we had in our house, or that was in my father's siblings' houses as well.
Yeah, right. Interesting. And I mean, what impact did your father's work as a chef have on you? I mean, tell me more about that.
Well, we worked for him as children, you know, from home when he would do catering jobs for the local bowling club, you know. So my brothers and I would make 100 sandwiches every Sunday for all of the older people that played bowls. And I'm happy that I never ate one of those sandwiches. what else? Yeah, and, you know, we would just tag along with him to these restaurants, and we would fold napkins for my dad's restaurant. We would set tables. We would sweep the floors. We would do anything that kept us out of the way but was efficient in some regards.
And do you still have a go-to when you go to a classic Chinese Australian restaurant?
No, I don't like them. I mean, the thing, oh my God, did I say that out loud? I do love them. I love them. But a lot of the time, you know, as children, when we would go to these restaurants, my dad wouldn't order on the menu. And it was, you know, but we had to go there because for him it was a social thing. So we would, eat off the menu as much as we could. There is this fantastic Chinese restaurant in, I think it's called, is it called Naruma or did I just make that up?
No. Oh, my God, I've been there.
Yes.
So, I've been to that restaurant.
Yes, and you've eaten the dumplings there and you've had, like, the cucumber salad. You know what I'm talking about. So that particular type of small town country restaurant, I mean, that's exceptional. In Castlemaine, there's one, like, I was thinking about my favourite places to eat yum cha in Melbourne, and actually it's in Castlemaine because there is a dim sum place that's owned by a man from Hong Kong, and his children went to the Steiner School that's out there. I think that he must be the only person, you could probably tell me if I'm wrong, that he, all of his dim sum, the meat that he uses is free range and organic, and I'm not sure that there's anyone else that does that.
Amazing. Oh, I don't know yet, but I will make it my business to find out. And
please find out. Tell me.
Yes, I will. And as you're speaking, I also remember my extreme fondness for Jennifer Wong's series Chopsticks or Fork. I don't know if you caught that, where she went around to different Chinese restaurants around in country Australia and told the stories of those restaurateurs. And it was, an absolutely brilliant series. So much heart in it.
I think so too. I saw that TV series and it was fantastic. It was so great. And, you know, my mum is a white Australian woman with, you know, an Irish background, and she has many siblings. And growing up, you know, I think of Christmas time and my dad would, if we were not with his family, we were with my mum's extended family. And, you know, like I remember my uncles who are all truck drivers and have red hair, and they would say, you know, g'day, Pedro, you know, you got any of those spring rolls? And my dad would make them Chinese food that he knew would be palatable for them, you know, and they'd say things like, oh, you know, we're going down to the Munhing to eat some of that, I don't know, what is it, like, you know, fried lemon chicken or something. And my dad was very, looked at them with such disdain, but he did appropriate his own cooking to suit and satisfy their, their local tastes, which was, spring and fried rice. But I loved that show. It was great.
Yeah, really, really sweet. So tell us more, Jess, about how food has threaded through your life and your work.
Well, I guess it all starts at home, doesn't it? So with the family, and I've been really blessed to have a father that's very passionate and interested in food. You know, I just assume that all people are. From a young age, you know, we would go and collect oysters with him, and he would do a lot of fishing, and like my favorite breakfast would be to have fried fish with pawpaw on the side. But when we were with his extended family, it was usually, you know, congee, seafood congee. As a child, I really did not enjoy eating congee, and now it's a huge part of my life, and I eat it when I'm sick, I eat it when I'm healthy, I eat it all of the time. I'm very interested in the different ways that people make it. And, food, I've lived in the Northern Territory. When I moved up there, I was a vegan, and I moved to a remote community to teach children, and there was no way that I could be a vegan on Elko Island. The indigenous name is Gilawinku, and my students there used to, you know, at morning tea they would go out and take their slingshot and they would kill birds and they would bring them back and light a fire. They would eat those. They would take me down to the beach and they would collect. They'd get salmon and they'd get lobster. They would collect snails. They didn't collect the trepang, you know, like the sea cucumber. So how has food, what, how has it woven through my life? I mean, everywhere. And as a musician, I started off touring through the regional and remote places in the Northern Territory and Western Australia. And so coming from a pretty foodie place, going into all of these regional places like the Tanami Desert, into the mines, performing in the detention centres, teaching on the island, being exposed to places that have limited abundance of food or, I don't know, I'm just raving now. But
well, I mean, you've had such different experiences, but I'm so taken with Elko Island and these experiences with the kids, you know, not coming back with their, you know, empty sandwich wrappers as might happen at a school in the city, but coming back with a bird. I mean, what did you learn about I don't know, the seasons or the way that kids were taught about food there?
Well, they were such a healthy community of people, and I went there during the intervention, and during the intervention they brought in this incentive to get children to come to school, and the incentive was if you come to school you get free food. And the food that they provided the children with was Deb mashed potato and these gelatinous strange meatball things that I looked at and I thought, my God, that looks like something out of, you know, the olden days, some kind of evil thing that nobody would be given anymore. That's what you were fed in the detention centres, and that's what you were fed in the mines as well, which was very interesting to see the same food around these different places. But the children knew better and they would never eat it. And they would say, I remember we went out to, we cut down pandanus trees to make string into, it was to make a basket, a lampshade for Jennifer Lopez. And the thing was, all of the food that would come in that was given to the students came in plastic containers, but on this island there was no recycling facilities. So within one term of teaching, which is 10 weeks, you saw this island fill up with plastic containers of half-eaten food everywhere because it's a very small island. And, yeah, and the people and the children did not want to eat this food. And the boys that I taught were the senior boys, and they had slingshots that they made out of the insides of old footballs. It was incredible stuff to see how they would get these birds, get the seafood so fast, so swift, with such agility. And there was always a fire and like a little campfire. Our classroom was covered in soot, and everyone, all of us, just smelt like a campfire. It was great. They were so healthy, you know, and strong and beautiful, and it was like, what? Yeah.
No, I mean, just incredible insights, and I mean, just that disconnect, and I suppose really the disrespect that's the thoughtlessness of sending that food and thinking that that was an incentive for anybody to turn up to school, and yeah, the trash that's comes in its wake. It's it's not okay, basically.
No. And the kids knew better, and they would laugh at the food, and they would say to me, they'd say, yappa, yappa, it's yucca, don't eat it. Yucca is like no, you know, in Yongamatu, and they're like, yucca, like, oh, no, yappa, you got to come with us, you know, and they'd take me out. And it was very eye-opening because as someone who was coming from Melbourne where we have such an abundance of produce and you can eat whatever you like, whatever season it is, you know, to kind of step into that environment, going in as, oh, I'm I'm a vegan. It was like, you're not a bloody vegan, Jessica. And also, living with the seasons. I think you mentioned that before. You know, it was very cyclical. It's like, this is what we eat. At the moment, it's salmon season. So we're eating the salmon and we're eating the lobsters because that's what's available, and we sing songs about that. So that was pretty cool.
I'm going to jump, just using the waste as a thread, to your work with Green Music, where you look at the waste that can be created around music events and festivals. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, so Green Music Australia, I think it's a non-profit organisation that created this artist guide to support artists and venues in, working on finding more environmental solutions. And one of those is to do with waste reduction, and even things like changing your band rider so that, you can just put a little asterisk when you send through, when you're going to play a show, whether it's at a festival or it's at a venue, instead of being provided with 24 bottles of plastic, water. It's like, we're trying to replace those types of things with, do you have a glass jug of water that we can use? Or, one of the things that they have encouraged is, reusable water bottles. But, I always lose them. So if you have I'd rather just have a glass of water out of the tap. Just looking at non-disposable cutlery and all of those things, going back to simplicity.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds so simple. Can I just have a glass of water? I feel there are too many water bottles being given out left, right and centre, and in the end that everyone's got like 20 water bottles in the cupboard. I think it's a bit the same with Keep Cups where, can we just actually sit down and have a coffee rather than just have like five more Keep Cups? I guess some of these things are done with good intentions, but I think if we actually strip it back to what the purpose is, that someone wants to be hydrated, then it can be, we just don't need to create another problem as we hydrate ourselves. Definitely those festivals are a place where hospitality and music intersect. I think a lot of people who work in hospitality going around to different venues could, would be thinking about this kind of thing all the time.
Absolutely, and I think that that's part of the Green Music Australia collaboration. I've been to one of the panels that they did last year where, they're having conversations and they're having meetings with venues and festivals, and it is a reciprocal, incentive. There's certain venues in Melbourne that are doing things like, I think one venue has... they don't give you any plastic anymore. They'll give you a meal with a knife and fork and a ceramic plate and a glass. I know that another venue has wine on tap, which I don't know what that's like. Just searching for ways. How you bring that to a festival, I don't know. But there's imaginative ways.
I'm interested in how you generally eat when you're touring, Jess, because I would imagine it can be pretty hard to, feel like healthy and strong when you're on a long tour.
Absolutely. You're mostly just eating hot chips or corn chips and hummus. And, then maybe you just don't want to eat anything because your guts are all tied up in knots after eating those three things. And it varies, because there's occasions where, there's these beautiful bespoke venues that part of playing there. I know that Meenian Hall out in regional Victoria, part of the experience of playing there is that they provide these beautiful, dinner for the band and for the support act. And everyone sits down and eats together, and there's candles and there's freshly cut flowers that come from their family garden, and those experiences are always enriching for the performance. And I mean, you know, that doesn't happen in most places. So, yeah, when you're touring, it's just like whatever you can get, and it's not very much. It's usually chips. And then you kind of get home and you might feel a bit depleted and, you know, run down, and that's when you come back to congee, because it's just easy to, it's easy to digest, you know, it helps heal your body, it increases your chi, and, yeah, it gives your body a break. So it's hard on the road. I mean, I reckon you know that, but, yeah.
Well, I'm often, like, my trips are usually about eating. So it's, yeah, sometimes, yeah, my break is, yeah, not eating out. No matter how nice the food is, it's just sitting at home and having a piece of lettuce and an apple.
Yes. Well, I mean, that's the other thing. Now that I'm older, you know, like when you're younger and you're a teenager or in your early 20s, but I don't know, maybe it's changing because these younger people seem to be quite progressive, a lot more so than, you know, my peers. But there is that element of like, let's find a beautiful place to eat together, you know, when if we can make some time for that, let's find an organic shop and get some, you know, we've got to get some apples, we've got to get some fruit so no one gets scurvy. So there's always that in mind, if there's the time, you know, and it's always trying to make the time for something beautiful, especially because I'm not that interested in, you know, oh, what's the venue going to give you? It's going to give you a case of beer. That doesn't – I need something to eat, you know.
Yeah, definitely. Jess, you know, I mentioned at the start of the show that I feel like there are lots of synergies between, you know, people who put music out into the world and people who put food out into the world. I mean, what's your perspective on that? Do you feel like you're dispensing some kind of nourishment? I mean, culture, clearly. Like, can you see any synergies?
Yes. And it's so interesting because, you know, some of my favorite artists, like, food is so important to them and their health is so important as well. And, yeah, you know, you want to be giving sustenance to the people that are coming to your shows, and that's regardless of what genre you may be a part of. You know, I've got some great rock and roll friends who, you know, they're vegans and they're into creating delicious vegan recipes, and I was thinking how cool it would be to create some kind of book that was, you know, recipes from rock artists. What about that? Something like that. And, you know, you go around and you ask, you know, what's your recipe? Anyway, that's because everyone I know that's a musician is an artist and they're into food. You know, even if they're not into food, they are into it.
Yeah, I love that. But what about this idea of, you know, what you give to your audiences? You know, like chefs fill up a restaurant, you fill up an auditorium. I mean, what about, you know, what are some of your, I guess, motivations as you feed people music?
The soul food, the food for the soul, you know, like Jungian analysts would say, you know, this person is never, you know, they overeat because they need some kind of soul nourishment that might come from music. Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, keep going with that.
Yeah, like, I don't know. I think that these are primal things, aren't they? Like music and dancing and eating. We actually need them for survival. And if you're going to get primitive, then it's like, you know, yeah, we're moving our bodies, we're communicating through sounds, we're scavenging for food, and now that we have access to all of this technology and advanced ways of being, it's still just as important. So I guess that, yes, the chef and the artist are interwoven, like you said in the introduction to your episode.
To your episode, actually. So just tell us what we need to know about the new album. What flavor music are you putting out?
Okay, so I've got a new collection of songs and they're coming out on April the 12th. And the name is Summer of Love, which I don't know, I think we all need, the whole world needs a summer of love. So it's 10 songs that I recorded during COVID and they're pretty improvised and a lot more the way that I recorded it isn't the way that I've worked previously in the past, because when I made this record, there were a lot of restrictions in Victoria. So it wasn't like I was taking a band into the studio to record an album for 10 days. It just didn't happen like that. So I had to find new ways of working, and that's what this album is.
Wow. Well, from what I've heard of it, it's so resonant, and I mean, I don't know, it just has a beautiful feeling of spaciousness to me. And yeah, like I said, I'm particularly taken with that song Everything Is Now and the video with it. Do you want to just talk about the dancer that you've worked with on that video?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yeah. Tony Yap is a contemporary Malaysian-Australian dancer, and he has a PhD in shamanism, and he features in that music video, Everything Is Now. And I just adore that man. I went to one of his two-hour dance workshops on the weekend, and it was transcendental. Like, I'll be back. I'm sorry to all of the professional dancers at his workshop, but I'll be back. He's a magic man, and we worked him hard. He did such a beautiful job.
It's really transfixing what he does in the video, and you know, and what you do together is really beautiful. Jess, I'm really grateful to you for spending time with us on this podcast. I love your music, and I think there's a lot that food people can learn from music people, and maybe vice versa. But thank you so much for sharing with us today.
My pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
This is Dirty Linen, and I'm Danny Vallant. We air the issues that the hospitality industry finds hard to talk about, hearing from different people with unique perspectives. We want to hear from you as well. If you have something that needs to be said about a topic, get in touch so we can include your perspective. Contact us at dirtylinen@deepintheweeds.com.au or hit us up on Insta @dirtylinenpodcast. We can't wait to hear from you.